It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, interviews with some of your favorite musical artists on Arkansas Sounds, content from the Butler Center's collections, information about what's happening in the library system, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the Cals Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio Cals, including links to resources mentioned in our segments, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org.
Arkansas Sounds presents a special screening of the 40th anniversary edition of Martin Scorsese's iconic film, The Last Waltz, on Friday, January 27th at 7 p.m. Relive or experience for the first time the band's historic 1976 farewell concert in the state-of-the-art Cal's Ron Robinson Theater. Fans can rock out to performances not featured in the original film and celebrate a moment in history featuring two Arkansas music legends, Levon Helm and Ronnie Hawkins. Tickets are $5. Purchase tickets at www.arkansasounds.org or at the Butler Center Galleries. Receiving flowers has always been a joy, but how much greater the pleasure when the flowers themselves carry special meaning? With the help of our special guest expert, Shirley Pratt, come learn the language of flowers and make your own scented bouquet to present to that special person in your life just in time for Valentine's Day. Our free program will be at noon on January 30th in the main library. Call 501-918-3035 for more information. Visit cals.org for information about all Cals has to offer. Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio Cals. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of, and some you haven't heard of, but probably want to know about. In addition to what you can hear on Radio Cals, check out cals.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
Hi, I'm John Miller. I'm the Arkansas Sounds Music Coordinator at the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and this is Arkansas Sounds on Primary Sources. Today, my guest is John Kane, community activist, host, and program manager at community radio station KABF 88.3. John, welcome to Primary Sources, and thanks for joining us.
Appreciate the invite, John.
Thank you so much. Let's start with the basics for folks who may not be familiar with you. They've probably heard your wonderful voice many times, but they may not be familiar with your vitals. Are you from Arkansas? Where are you from?
I'm a country boy. I'm from Wrightsville, Arkansas. I grew up there in the 50s.
Wow. Wow. So you've been in Arkansas pretty much all your life then?
About half my life.
Your life.
Yeah.
Most folks remember you and know you from your involvement with KBF from the very beginning. I can testify that I had a radio show at KBF when I was 16 in 86, and you were there then, and I can remember you from the very beginning. So was that your first involvement with community radio and radio in general?
Radio in general, no. I first started in commercial radio.
Wow, okay.
In the late 60s, as the Mellow Fellows exited KALO, which was the first real radio signal in the city.
Wow.
So I started with a proposal back about 64 with Ed Phelan, who was station manager. I wanted to bring a different profile and perspective on African-American culture that was not in the medium as it should have been with other disciplines other than just music. So we were talking about theater and those sorts of things, and that's how I got into it. Made a flat-out proposal. He needed an engineer. I wasn't a fully qualified engineer, but I had enough sense to take readings overnight because, believe it or not, I started at a 1,000-watt AM station that was 500 watts at night.
Wow.
I did a five-hour late night show.
Wow. A five-hour show? What time did you start?
Midnight until 5 a.m.
Wow. Did you ever go off the air, or did it just start again, programming start again at 5?
I was live. The program format actually changed to morning drive at 5. I was out there. So I did that every night, 6 nights a week.
Live. Wow.
And went home and got a couple of hours of sleep, and then went to do it and did a day job for about 6 hours. That's how I got in it.
Man.
Yeah.
So did you stay in radio pretty much from that time forward?
I've been in radio ever since. Never been out.
And so that was 64. How old were you then?
Oh, I was out of the Navy 5 years. So I was probably 26, maybe.
26. So you've been in radio since you were 26 years old in 64.
Yeah.
Wow. And then where did radio lead you to from there? Other places in Arkansas?
It led me into preservation in a kind of different way than most people probably get into it. I didn't really realize I was becoming a preservationist by getting into radio with this proposal, like, let's tell the real story about African-American culture. Because it was all top 40, a lot of buffoonery in it, not real character stuff. Mm-hmm. Other disciplines weren't in it, you know.
Right.
And that was where I was coming from. Now, I gained this knowledge, John, through my dad, through school. I was a good student. Mm-hmm. I liked civics growing up, man, because it was broad, and I read a lot, and I could talk to people older than I was about what these things really were. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I kind of got my insight. It just gave me a lot of confidence to go ask for what I wanted to do instead of standing on the sidelines. The way I really got to that point was joining the Navy. It was a process to convince my parents, like, I wanted to see the world.
Wow.
And they were kind of hesitant. I think they figured out he's going to take off. So they signed off.
And how long were you in the Navy?
4 years.
4 years. And so you pretty much went into the radio fairly shortly out of the Navy. Then.
Out of the Navy is where I really got hands-on experience, ship-to-shore radio. There are two kinds of people in the Navy. There are technicians and there are sailors.
Mm-hmm.
I was a sailor, boatswain mate. Those are the people that take care of the ship,
right?
Can sail without sonar and radar.
Wow. Okay.
So you have to know all this. You have to know semaphore. You have to know how to communicate wherever you are there. So I had all of this energy and stuff. I was 17 when I went in, and I just wanted to see things. So I saw most of all the Western Pacific. China, Japan, Okinawa.
Wow.
I basically went the same route that the soldiers and sailors did in the Second World War.
Mm.
And I had choice duty because I was a good sailor.
Ah.
So that was choice duty to be in a position like that. And I was motorboat coxswain for an admiral who was the commander of Service Squadron 3.
Wow.
So his command was repair ships, things that brought supplies, ammo ships, food.
Right.
And to the task force that would be out at sea. So I've worked it all, man. And what you're actually looking at and talking to now is a sailor that's a landlubber.
Once a sailor, always a sailor.
Yeah. I've had a lot of experience with people, that, I guess is what I'm saying. So I was a good sailor.
Right.
And got rewarded with good duty.
Right, right. And I guess your love in school of civics is also sort of informed, not just maybe your sense maybe of duty with the Navy and your desire to see the world and see other cultures, but that's also informed you about our own culture and participation in that culture.
You hit it on the head, John. That is what made me realize what I need to do. And I was becoming a preservationist, really didn't know it, but as I met the challenge and saw things changing in the medium, I actually made some changes happen because I took a proposal to a person to listen to me and let me in there. Then I realized bit by bit I should be saving things. I moved a couple of times, spent a good part of my radio career in Alabama and a little bit in Atlanta.
Okay.
Doing the same kind of work. Matter of fact, I think that's where my first recognition came from, people saying and seeing the results of organizing and funding things. So I became beside a jazz host overnight at Birmingham, the same way I did starting out here in Little Rock. I also was chairman of the board of a community theater group.
Oh, okay.
So we raised funds, we did plays, we traveled a little bit further south down to Florida and a little bit in Atlanta doing African-American theater. So I was a part of that and was recognized by the first African-American mayor of Birmingham, Richard Arrington, in 1983. Now, about that time, I'm making up my mind to come back home on some of these projects I'm looking at. I'm down there about 8 years by that time.
And are you using your own sort of sense of your, as you talked about earlier, your proposals, where you sort of had an idea and maybe joined with other like-minded people? And I've known you for a while just through KBF, and I've known you to sort of be sort of the spearhead and sort of maybe the prime organizational force, if you will. And was that kind of what led you to continued success there in Alabama and what also brought you home?
You hit it right on the head, John. I realized that I'm here because of my style of presenting things on radio and how should I really use it now. But I'm only in commercial radio, which is a different animal than public radio. And I was able to get with organizations that really cared about preservation, and I just embraced everything. A lot of people questioned that, but to make partners and collaborations, that's what you got to do. That's how people recognize your passions, your willingness to dedicate yourself to achieve some things that they want to see happen. And so I found out how to do that politically and just became that person that stands up. I just stand up and say, hey, we can do it. Let's go do it.
So you said that you had some thoughts about maybe wanting to come home from your success there in Alabama. That brought us up to about 83. What happened then?
Well, realizing what was happening here with the 630 being the new traffic route as they were planning this. I left here in 76, so about 83, I'm about 7 years into Birmingham, I think, into Alabama, and really reached out to the Preservation Alliance here 1 year before I came back to home and the state on this project on what to do about the remaining icons on 9th Street, how to save them. So I was in touch with all the key preservationists up here. Bill Worthen was the real person that hooked me up with it. ABC, follow these, do these things, and you can actually preserve those buildings. So 400 miles away, a year before I come back here, I'm working on this project.
He never really left Arkansas.
I never really left.
that's a great Arkansas citizen right there.
Yeah, man,
you never leave.
Never left.
It never leaves you, and you never leave it.
Yeah.
So when you started getting involved with this, is that when sort of the groundswell of folks trying to preserve things kind of started coming together and maybe thought, hey, we should come up with some sort of organizational community force, and that's where the radio station or the inklings of the radio station came from?
Well, the people that knew me before KABF came into reality, I reached out to them. They were mostly educators.
Mm-hmm.
But it still took 4 years working alone to organize the group.
Wow.
And as we found the partners, the city being the first partner to step up, because we had this qualifying look of dedicated people,
right.
What we did was make a call to action, as some of those buildings were considered to be torn down. And what we needed to do, we made that call to action. About 60 people turned out to that call to action. And that's how we started to roll that ball, with real community leaders coming aboard with their expertise. It was those people that did the heavy lifting, John. I was just out there stirring the pot and annoying people.
Bringing attention in the spotlight.
Bringing attention. You have to do that. Man, I pull grass out of cracks in the sidewalk so they would see us there.
Yeah.
And just went straight to the city for most of the real partnership. Who owned the building? How could we, our little group, get it? We needed a place to work in. They gave us that. They gave us everything that we needed. They started to see the coalescence of this preservation group coming together.
And where did they give you the place to organize the workspace?
The workspace was actually at the corner of Markham and Main Street.
Okay.
Right on the corner.
Wow.
Eventually, we got it about 2 years before the Downtown Partnership moved into the same building with us. Well, we were solidly locked into this preservation modality then. We had the primary historic architect that did a lot of this stuff, Tommy Jameson, well known for his work in the Pulaski County Courthouse and other places. They gave us a lot of insight on what you can actually do, even in the worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario came and caught us. A fire destroyed the building after the partnership between the city, the state, and us. But it's also a two-edged sword. It created this catalyst that made everybody recognize what we were trying to do. So the fire happened on the 17th of March, and on
St. Patrick's Day?
When was that? 92? When did we start that thing? I forgot the actual date there. I have to recollect myself here. But when the fire happened, within 48 hours, we were in the Capitol Rotunda with the people that had given us the money, the House and legislative branches, and the Black Caucus doing the lifting, had given us the money to start the restoration. So there we were. And Huckabee is still governor then. So a good thing about us, we had a $1 million policy with Lloyd's of London, and we asked him for $1 million out of the Arkansas Department of Heritage budget. He gave it to us. We just kept rolling. We turned a destroyed project into a new building project.
Wow.
Basically, what we're looking at now down there, John, is really a close facsimile of the original building. I know more about it because probably...
And we're talking about Mosaic Templars?
The Mosaic Templars.
Right.
I'm probably one of the few people that were in that building when it was mostly being used for other purposes, vacated. I actually worked in it about 6 months after I got out of the Navy in 1959. So I had an idea. That's what I really discovered, the ambience and the aura of the building.
Wow.
I had only heard about it.
Wow. Well, what brought you to, when you came back to Arkansas in the 80s, what was sort of the beginning forces of the community radio station and the idea of that?
I came back a month before that, so I had an idea of who was organizing it, actually Acorn. I was one of the few people doing late night shows here that got the information about Acorn and their mm-hmm. community work and the things that they were doing, one of the few commercial stations, because I had this kind of, I had the freedom to do what I wanted, John, without having a top 40 format or somebody mm-hmm. saying, you need to be doing this. And so with the signal being configured the way it was an education for me and most of the white audiences that mm-hmm. listened to that signal. So it was a definite change from screaming top 40 radio at midnight until 5 a.m. It was a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah.
Not much talk from me, just profiling the artists, their work, which was important to me.
So when you first started there at KBF and KBF first went on the air, you were primarily an on-air host?
Yes, jazz. Okay.
Jazz.
I come back to preserve jazz culture, Ninth Street.
Right.
That's really how I got to the station. I didn't ask to be, it was there.
Oh, wow.
I just walked into it and said, hey, man, I'll help you. I'm John from KALO. Oh, man, we need you.
And you've been there ever since.
Been there ever since, man. I do everything, John.
I think you've pretty much done every job there and yeah. probably every shift possible, at least probably four or five times.
But, you know, I feel good about that because it's about the community. It's not about me.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of the community, you've been so involved not only as a community activist and somebody who's trying to gather people together, you've also been involved with the music community, which, you know, sometimes is part of the activist community, but sometimes it's not. You've been, as you mentioned, you've been trying to preserve jazz culture and promote jazz culture. Speak a little bit about your involvement about Arkansas music and Arkansas musicians, because, like I said, I've known you to be involved in Arkansas jazz and blues since at least the 80s, if not before mm-hmm. that. But speak a little bit about what you think of your involvement and how that's affected you.
Well, my real involvement with a producer of music was really how I got engaged and interactive with all the cultures. Of these different cultures we got. Lee Anthony's Soul Brothers Record mm-hmm. Shop was one of the people that I hung out with. I knew most of the musicians, John Craig and all mm-hmm. those guys, because we were about the same age and they were the working musicians. Naturally, with a kind of show and freedom I had, well, they had a good profile in those late night hours. Sometimes they would even come to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was. Now, I wasn't at the downtown studio. Mm-hmm. I'm at the transmitter site.
Oh, okay.
Doing these shows.
Up on the mountain, right?
Not on the mountain yet.
Oh,
I'm at
okay.
Where
the original
Pizza
transmitter.
Parlor,
okay.
Out there.
Okay.
Because it was an AM station, so the transmitter was there. I had a little desk in there that I did my program hosting from, and just servicing the transmitter.
Wow.
Back in those days, you had to call out there every hour or so to reach a transmitter and
right.
things like that. And then, too, with that kind of working atmosphere, not being interrupted, I thought through a lot of things, brought a lot of consciousness and awareness to people about everybody needing to hear these stories and know mm-hmm. these people. And that's how I really became engaged with it. My first engagement was with York Wilburn. York Wilburn was also one of the real musicians that you could talk to about their craft and how they did that.
Mm.
He had a band when I was in school, and my first prom was, we booked York Wilburn and his band up on Granite Mountain. out to Oberlin's Club. I thought I was hot stuff, man. I'm 16, like you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you're one of many people who have spoken highly of York Wilburn and great memories of his band and all the people that he's touched through the years, not just musicians, but also people, mm-hmm. just listeners and dancers and people that remember them from when they played their high school dances and such. Yeah.
So I was engaged with Lee. I met musicians that probably never would have had he not had that Soul Brothers record shop, because mm-hmm. he was a great producer, man. Albert King and all those people he brought to the studios and
True
recorded.
Soul Records, yeah.
True Soul Records, man.
Great label. Yeah, yes. I'm sure you're aware of the reissue stuff that they did in 2011, mm-hmm. and that is, it sounds great. It looks great. It's got that TV special as part of the DVD package. It's a great little package.
And most of those guys I knew, those guys and gals, I personally knew them, man.
Wow. And there's a lot of those folks that are still around and some of them are still playing, Thomas East and occasionally John Craig and some of those mm-hmm. folks. Yeah. And so you've been involved with Arkansas music and Arkansas musicians for so long. Talk about how you think that KBF has helped and helped organize musicians, because there's not a quarter that passes that there's not some sort of benefit that musicians are organizing for KBF, and they're doing that and playing for free. They're not getting paid. They're trying to raise money for KBF, and they believe so strongly in that. Talk about how you think that KBF affects musicians and how they are able to use it as an outlet for themselves and their music.
Well, starting in the Little Rock community with people that I knew and wanting to kind of bring in more cultures that had not been presented is, I think, what people began to realize, especially the artists, the other musicians realizing mm-hmm. it. So once we did the basic things like blues and jazz and country music and the rock stuff, we began to reach out for the international diversity that this state needed, and the station has been instrumental in it.
That was a portion of an interview with John Kane, community organizer and program director of the community radio station KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock. To hear more of the interview with John Kane, visit the Primary Sources podcast at cals.org/podcasts. Want to know what's happening in the world of CALS? The new programming guide will help you navigate the variety of youth and adult programs, book clubs, movies, and more across CALS's 14 branches, the Ron Robinson Theater, the Butler Center, and River Market Books and Gifts. Look for the programming guide in a branch near you or visit cals.org. Radio CALS is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.